Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Food Insight podcast, where I, Kimberly Wilson, chartered psychologist and enthusiastic eater, take you through all things food, psychology, and everything in between. In this episode, I'm breaking bread with Henrietta Inman. Henrietta is a pastry chef, author, and cookery teacher who specialises in whole and heritage grain baking. After graduating with a distinction from the Professional Patisserie Scholarship at Westminster Kingsway College, she apprenticed at the prestigious five-star Lanesborough Hotel in London's Knightsbridge. She is the author of the book Clean Cakes, and her second book, The Natural Baker, is released in March. In this episode, we talk about the difficulties and controversies of applying the word clean to food. She also opens up about having an eating disorder and how she's reconciling her relationship with food. As a tiny side note, I think she touches here on a hidden epidemic of eating difficulties in the food industry, whether that's books and social media accounts that act as a cover for an eating disorder, or how the tough conditions in professional kitchens and the restaurant industry can lead chefs to self-soothe with food or alcohol. I think this is a really important conversation to have, and one that certainly needs more attention. Henrietta is one of the gentlest, most self-effacing people I have ever met, and I found this conversation both brave and very touching, and I'm incredibly grateful to her for sharing part of her story with me and all of you. So here is my conversation with Henrietta Inman.
Don't worry, just relax. This won't hurt a bit. Okay. I'm here with Henrietta Inman.
Hello, Henrietta.
Hello.
Very nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
We're having another Breaking Bread episode, so I'm really grateful to have you here in my office. It's lovely to see you anyway.
You too.
But let's kick off where we always kick off, which is with your meaningful food.
Okay.
So what have you brought with you for us to share?
I've brought two things. They're meaningful in lots of different ways. First is it's a brownie, but it's not just your usual brownie. It's made with, it's 100% dark chocolate, and then it's got coconut oil and coconut sugar and eggs and naturally gluten-free flour called teff flour, which they use traditionally in Ethiopia for things like, is it called injera?
Injera, yeah.
Yeah. So they're sort of pancakes. It's sort of their, one of their staple ingredients.
Mm, the fermented, bread.
Yeah.
Eaten with stews.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And then, I'm sure they do a pancake. I think they might do
it's a flat bread.
I've never
so
had it.
Really
it
like
people,
a
I need to, mm. I really want to eat Ethiopian food. And then I think for sort of porridge and things like that, but there are a few companies that now bring it over to the UK. I'm mainly in my, because I'm a pastry chef, so mainly in my work I like to use more UK grown grains, but I think, we've been importing food for years and years and years, and it's, if I know where it's from and I know the farmers are being supported, then, and I know that with this, so, and I use ingredients for their wonderful flavours, and I found that teff has this quite sort of molasses-y flavour, which is lovely with really dark chocolate, and then the coconut oil has quite a sort of, lots of sort of vanilla notes, and a natural sweetness as well, and then the coconut sugar has a lovely caramel flavour. So I suppose it's meaningful to me. It's sort of, it's one of the recipes. So I'm a pastry chef and I'm trained very classically. My whole sort of foundation is with white flour, white sugar, all the, and learning all the wonderful things like genoir, and we did a bit of baking, so croissant, everything like that. Mousses, creams, crème, all that. Everything like that. And I worked in kitchens about 5 years in London. And then I moved back home to Suffolk, where I grew up, and started my own business. I've always wanted my own business. I sort of feel like I'm slightly still getting there, which I hope will result in a cafe or restaurant one day. And I think it was sort of a mixture of being very tired, and wanted to just sort of have a good rest and eat sort of good food, get like the good food I'd grown up with, because we have my mother is an amazing gardener, so we've got a lovely vegetable garden. And Suffolk is really known for its amazing food producers. Mm. So there's lots of wonderful produce around, and it was just so nice to be back home and have a rest from working quite long hours in kitchens and just sort of feed myself well again. Because in kitchens it's quite a bit of a sort of clash, really. You're making this amazing, delicious food for customers, yet the chefs are often, you know, running around all day, and you sort of, particularly in one place I worked was an Italian restaurant, so it was mainly sort of pasta most days for lunch, which is a very good, you know, it's sort of slow-burning carbohydrates and all that, which is very good, but you sort of do eat what you're given. And sometimes you're just so tired, you just sort of shove anything in your mouth. So it was nice to just be back home again and surrounded by all that lovely produce and have that. And then I sort of slightly wanted to get those ingredients around me into my baking as well. So I started seeking out more local suppliers, so local mills that had spelt and rye and wheat, local dairy farmers, everything, local sort of rapeseed oil producers who would cold press it, so it's got all that lovely flavour as well. And so I started to experiment a bit more with my baking, make it slightly more sort of just a bit more natural in a way. And I just realised when I had these lovely sort of bases of whole grain flours and sort of more cold pressed oils and things, that made so much more flavour and complexity and textures as well. Even though I love, you know, the traditional stuff. I just realised instead of starting with white flour and white sugar, which don't really have much flavour, they're great sort of canvases for layering on everything. But when you start with your canvas of the lovely sort of nutty whole grains, and then rapeseed oil, which is very, has a lovely earthy flavour, I think I'm going to repeat lovely a lot. I listened to myself once on another radio programme and I said it about 100 times within the space of 5 minutes, I think. So I started to bake a bit more like that, and just realised how, and also just not over-sweetening things. I think so often things are just too sweet. You can't really taste what they're meant to actually taste of. And it's so nice to actually taste the fruits or the chocolate or the coffee. And then this brownie, it's also gluten and dairy-free, and obviously the coconut sugar is a unrefined sugar. When I started selling at farmers markets, I realised a lot of people really wanted, either they were affected slightly by all the media and all these sort of new books coming out, or health, whatever reports saying dairy-free is a better way to be, or if you'll be healthier if you cut out gluten, or things like that. So I think people were either influenced by that, sadly, or they did actually have intolerances. Gluten and dairy. So I used to sell at farmers markets, and they'd say, have you got any sort of free from stuff?
So you used to get quite a lot of requests.
Yeah. So then I started testing out these new things like this teff flour, and I'd never baked with, you know, in a hotel. I worked, the first place I worked was the Lanesborough, and that's, you know, afternoon tea and, you know, very traditional, but amazing things. But things like coconut oil and for baking wasn't really sort of heard of. So it was great to sort of really broaden the use of the ingredients I had, and also just broaden the array of flavours and everything like that that I was getting into my work. And that led to my first book, that's called Clean Cakes. And clean just means like pure and natural good stuff, but then it sort of got slightly...
So how did you mean it when you wrote Clean Cakes? Because I think it's probably worth delineating that a little bit.
No, I think there's also a difference between sort of gluten-free flour blends, which are basically lots of starches, tapioca starch. It's basically sort of normal white flour just converted into a gluten-free flour, mm-hmm. tapioca starch, potato starch. It doesn't really have much flavour. I don't think the texture's that great. So I didn't want to use those. That's what a lot of the stuff on the shelves in supermarkets use, and they're just not that satisfying. I wanted to use more sort of nourishing and these whole grain, the gluten-free whole grain flours. So clean for me was, you know, and the cold-pressed oils and things like that. Clean, actually my mother just, when I was doing these, inverted commas, healthier or healthy cakes in patisserie, my mother just said one day as a joke, oh, call them your clean cakes. And, you know, I thought, okay, alliteration and things like that. And then there's a really lovely graphic designer who lived up the road from us in the village that I grew up in and where I moved back to start my business. Mm. She did a lovely sort of logo. And I think maybe also because it was in Suffolk, it wasn't in London where this whole thing was happening. So some people were a bit dubious of it, the word clean. Some people liked it. I think the people who... And still, I don't, you know, Jamie Oliver uses it. I don't think it's a... I mean, I see the pros and cons, but for me it was never something extreme. It was just to describe these nice, pure, sort of not heat-treated oils and less processed flours, just keeping their bran and everything, just natural stuff. And then when I said, you know, it was quite catchy, you know, alliteration and things, mm-hmm. so I said it to my publisher when all this... Well, as part of my proposal. And she loved it. She thought, that will be great. That will sell. So I think... But then, you know, and then I became known as the Clean Cake Girl, and hence Clean Cakes. And I suddenly... And then there was this big backlash. Mm. And I didn't... Yeah, I sort of felt I was sort of to say... Talk to people about my book. It's called Clean Cakes, Delicious Patisserie Made with Whole, Natural and Nourishing Ingredients and Free from Gluten, Dairy and Fine Sugar. So I think that's another thing to do with sort of the whole media thing to do free from is a lot of the time it's sort of advertised by these beautiful, gorgeous young women. I'm not saying I am, but that's I think that's what sort of made people think, oh, it's a gluten-free brownie, it must be healthy, and it's not really... the point. So I think that's how the whole sort of clean word got a bit misconstrued and just sort of, but for me it was never, I do understand it was never meant to sort of mean clinical food or anything because the rest, my recipes.
Sorry for the noise outside. Oh, no, it's okay.
I think also because I am a pastry chef and I have worked in kitchens for a good 5 years and worked for myself for a good sort of 7 years. You know, worked for amazing chefs like Sky Gingell and at the Lanesborough and lots of, and some Italian chefs. And I know what good food should taste like. I do feel like I should be confident and say that. And I think even though, you know, this brownie, for example, doesn't have any gluten or dairy, and people might automatically think it's really tasteless or something. Mm-hmm. It is actually incredibly tasty, and I use these ingredients because maybe to start with it was for customers, perhaps, who were wanting this stuff, but then I suddenly realised how flavoursome they were. It's sort of... Do you see what I mean?
I do. What I can sense is you trying to kind of tread this line what sounds like for you an exploration of alternative ingredients.
Definitely.
That were kind of off the kind of beaten path of your training, and a desire to kind of get people to be more familiar with those, which actually coincided with something else which actually was a bit more sinister, to be honest.
Maybe
not intentionally so, but you know, that these sorts of things got co-opted, and certainly the word clean got co-opted to mean exclusive and excluding of certain things. So it's quite interesting to hear how you're trying to manage that. And, and
I did always feel like whenever I introduced my book to people, I sort of, I mean, I'm guilty of it with giving a slice of cake to someone. I always sort of have to apologise for something, like, oh, I cooked it for 2 minutes too long or something. So when I say introduce my book, I say, but the clean just means nice and nice and natural and pure, and it's nothing extreme. I always sort of, and I don't, but then again, I see the whole, you know, because you do look at, look up hashtag clean eating, and it is like, you know, some steamed spinach and an egg, which is fine, but, you know, or just a
bowl of raw vegetables.
Yeah, or a chicken breast with some steamed vegetables. And I, you know, fine if that's what that person wants to eat, but I certainly understand how it's got, it has had
other connotations.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But I never, you know, the recipes in my first book, I love sort of, you know, like a blueberry lemon mousse cake, and it's sort of good stuff. And
it sounds like you actually feel a bit sad about being misunderstood.
A little bit. Yeah, I mean, even with my next book that's coming out, it comes out next, tomorrow week. It's called The Natural Baker. And even with that, I sort of think, oh, what are people going to think of the word natural? Does that mean? But I do
so
use
unnatural baking.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. again, you know, I can't just say to my publisher, this is the title I want. You know, it's sort of what they think and what they think is going to sell. I think natural is a much better word than clean. But again, it could still be easily misinterpreted by people. But this, my second book, it's, you know, for me, natural is just sort of, you know, preservatives or colourings or sort of extra flavourings. It's just, and it is sort of slightly going back. You know, I use what, if I need to sort of make the texture a bit lighter in a bread and I feel like 100% whole grain flour is making it a bit heavy, I will add a bit of white flour. It's not sort of
demonising.
Yeah.
A more processed food.
Yeah, no, definitely not. And I, yeah, it's hard.
I think it really is hard, and I think it's worth saying that, because I think it would be easy for people to make an assumption of where you're coming from based on the titles.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, knowing you a little bit, you know, and we've met in the markets and we can talk about that, knowing that you do eat broadly and you do, you know, eat what people would consider normal foods.
Yeah, yeah.
And that it's not about just some sort of extreme Instagrammable kind of diet where you're trying to align yourself with some particular exclusionary diet. I think it's important to be able to say that, but also to recognise that it's a difficult balance, because there's an argument to be made that perhaps you did benefit from the clean eating.
Yeah, this kind is of true.
Craze, if we can call it that, because it fit into a certain bubble at the time.
Yeah.
And maybe you rode that little wave a little bit, but equally, on the other hand, there was the backlash, and there is the kind of balancing of what it really means, and is it a complete explanation of how you cook and eat and all that sort of stuff. So I think
the next book is certainly more of a reflection of, although, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I've had an eating disorder. I still probably do, I think. And sort of borderline anorexic. So since I was about 15, my weight has gone from very underweight to then being told by the doctor to go back to your normal weight, and then not being happy with just being a normal size, which should be quite fine. Then, you know, losing it again, you're underweight, put it back on. So I suppose in a way also this first book was, you know, it certainly was sort of listening to my customers, but maybe it was, like I say, everyone does see these women saying, this is how we should eat, I'm eating this, I'm slim and healthy, and, you know, you can't sometimes help but be affected by that. So I did, I suppose, in a way, this exploration of, I think I'm very, it's very good that I discovered all these new alternative ingredients, and it probably was slightly a way for me to also eat like that, cut out gluten and dairy, because I thought that would make me thin or something. But I think that this second book, even though I am still slightly neurotic about my eating, which is, people might think is a bit odd when you're a chef, but I think, you know, I think a lot of chefs, a lot of people have spoken about it. It's, you know, if you're surrounded by food all day, it's really hard, like you were saying, to find somebody who has a healthy relationship with food is very rare these days. And I do think a lot of chefs do, you know, if your food is all around you constantly, you're either sort of nibbling on it all day and then you suddenly think, oh God, I've been doing that all. It's just very, it's quite hard to...
It's quite an unnatural food environment, isn't it?
Exactly.
So constantly surrounded by that.
Yeah.
And first of all, thank you. It's very brave of you to say that and to talk about that. And yes, we were talking just before we started recording about how I certainly think that whilst not everybody has an eating disorder, that rates of disordered eating, where people are eating to a restrictive plan, to they are counting calories, where they are eating to time, where they are trying to go until they are very, 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 very hungry before they allow themselves to eat, where they feel like they have to compensate for eating with extra exercise or extra restriction. I think that is incredibly common. And that absolutely someone with a relaxed relationship with food, where they just go, what do I fancy? Eat that without trying to quantify it or justify it is incredibly rare. And so I would imagine that if you take that kind of attitude to food into an environment where you're constantly surrounded by it and constantly working with it, that it becomes quite difficult to try to hold on to a sense of normality with your eating in that situation.
And also sort of just in those situations, as I was saying, you're working such long hours, you sort of, even if your stomach might not be rumbling loads, you're probably just really tired and just want some sort of, some form of sugar or just something, which might then make you feel more tired, I don't know, but it is hard. But as I was saying, the first book, so the other thing I bought is another sweet thing. My second book does have savoury recipes. Plug. You can edit that. So the next thing is, it is actually dairy free. It's actually vegan. Cause I enjoy experimenting, whether that's vegan baking or, using different ingredients. I think different cuisines, whether it's cuisines from all over the world or whether it's raw or whether it's, you know, vegetarian, vegan, whatever, I think there's room for it all. And that's what I think sometimes, you know, it's hard to say that, and sometimes it does have this message underlying that, you know, eating that is going to make you glow and be amazing or whatever, but I think this cake is delicious in its own right, whether it's vegan or dairy-free or... It's actually got whole grain spelt in it, which I use because it just gives it more depth of flavour, I think.
Spelt is delicious.
Yeah. And then it's actually just made... So I boil up figs and then mash in bananas, a bit of apple puree. So they're the only sweeteners. But I think, again, just with not over-sweetening things, I found that's plenty. And then it's got lovely sort of mixed spice, cardamom, and some big chunks of 85% dark chocolate. So that was probably when I... So the next book is a bit more relaxed, and I do feel, hopefully, that I've become a bit more relaxed about my own eating, and I'm not sort of... You know, I definitely wrote Clean Cakes when I was also sort of not eating gluten or dairy. But I suddenly, and then I sort of went through a bit of a vegan phase, and I would say burnt out. I think that's slightly a bit extreme, and I'm sure other people have been more tired, but I think I'd done sort of, had a week of a lot of cake orders and supplying a local shop with my macaroons and then doing a farmer's market and sort of trying to be vegan. And I got home from this farmer's market surrounded by, you know, local producers who had lovely
cheeses
and yeah, and some friends rear longhorn cattle, and they had lovely oh god, what's the stuff you put in bagels, and you know,
salt beef.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Delicious salt beef, and I was restricting myself all these things. I wasn't, you know, the meat, the any produce, meat, poultry that I would eat. You know, I knew my parents are, my mother has help in the garden sort of once every other week from a lovely local man who would always bring us pigeons and things, you know, for 50p, and we grew up on pigeons and pheasants that there would be an endless supply of in our freezer. So a chicken Kiev from Tesco's would be a massive treat. So, you know, if I was going to eat meat, I knew it was locally sourced and, you know, free range. If I was going to have eggs, I knew it was like the same. Flowers, you know, vegetables from our garden. But I was restricting myself of all the, you know, gluten and dairy. I'm not allergic to them. Why was I suddenly cutting all these things out? Mm. And I did. I got home from this market and I was shattered and I just craved butter. There's also raw people who make raw, delicious raw milk and butter locally as well. So I was craving butter, eggs, and salt beef. And I ate them and I just felt so much better. And I thought, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? And, you know, just, I think that's another thing with eating disorders. Your brain is just consumed by thoughts about food and weight and, well, me, sort of how much I was exercising things. And there's so many more worthwhile things we can be thinking about. And especially when a lot of the world doesn't have food. I think the fact that we have it, you know, we should treat it with a lot of love and sort of celebrate it, not restrict ourselves things that bring us joy and happiness. And I think food, it has such an effect on how we feel and bring people together. I'm crying a little.
It's okay. You suddenly realise how much you're missing out on.
Exactly. Yeah, and I definitely sort of sometimes avoid social situations because I was worried about what the food was going to be or things like that. Then I'm not quite sure what sort of was the clincher that made me, I don't know.
Well, I think what's really striking is that moment where you recognised what you were craving.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Because so much of eating disorders is about denial of any kind of feeling, whether that's an emotion. I think we need to understand that there's emotion underneath eating disorders, that it's not all about food and body image, but it's often much more deeply about self-esteem and how we feel about ourselves. But there's very often a huge value put on the ability to deprive oneself, you know, like it's an achievement.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Achievement to say no, or to hold off, or to restrict, and that's where the kind of issue with things like clean comes in, is because it seems to advocate restriction. Yeah. But this, I think, is an enormously important moment in this time when you come home and you're tired and you think, this is what I want.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to respect yourself enough to be able to allow yourself to have it, and to think that just your desire for it is enough justification to have it. It doesn't need to have a special nutritional power or anything like that.
Or have I done that exercise? Can I eat this? Or just, I think, I haven't read Ruby Tando's new book yet, Eat What You Want. But it's about, you know, eating what we want, and I think that's so important. And it just, it was amazing. I mean, it's amazing to publish a book, full stop. And I still sort of, I think I'm still a bit anxious about the book coming out next Thursday and hearing everybody's reactions until I'm sort of, people say, oh, you must be so proud. But it's like, it's sometimes a bit of an anticlimax. You know, you've been with these recipes and writing them for about a year, and then you get, and, you know, doing the cooking all the recipes for the photo shoots and doing the styling, and it's, you know, and then suddenly you receive this copy and, you know, you've seen it all. You've seen the photos on the screen. There's a bit, and I don't think, and I have other friends who've, another friend, she's called Miranda York. She writes the most beautiful annual magazine called At the Table, and the second copy, I only knew her when she published, the second one came out, and people said, we were both talking about it, and she said, people say, you know, you must be so proud and everything like that, are you pleased with it? And it's not really until I hear other people's reactions, you know, I've tested, however many times I've tested the recipes or given them to friends to test, there might still be something, someone might have a weird oven and they might say, this isn't working, or it took me half an hour instead of 10 minutes or something. So it's not until I feel like I hear the reactions of other people that I'm going to, fingers crossed, be proud. But I feel, no, I'm definitely proud of it. But
it's an anxious time.
Yeah, definitely. Probably hence a few tears before and just a bit tired. But I think the first book, despite the sort of slight underlying controlled eating around it, I'm very happy I sort of discovered all those new ingredients, and I'm really happy about the way it sort of opened up my baking. But the second book, I really, you know, I was craving these things, you know, butter is a really wonderful fat and a really good thing, and, you know,
it's delicious,
it's great in baking. Why am I not using it? So the second book is just a bit more, broader, and just, you know, sometimes it's coconut oil because I love it. Again, it's really about the point. I think natural or clean, they were never, or it's never meant to be anything extreme. I just pick these ingredients really because I love their flavours, and I think they make very delicious things. And the reason why I cook is because I love to create these delicious things and bring people joy. I think that's what food is really about. Obviously sustenance, and some people, you know, I've had a very close friend who was completely uninterested in food. Even though, you know, when I said to him, he was a lot older than me, a family friend, sort of early 80s, but we had this sort of kindred spirits. I was about 18 when I first met him, and he was a sculptor, and I remember saying to him, I want to be a pastry chef, and he just thought it was the most sort of very sort of minor thing. He said he wanted me to be an explorer. I can't remember. Yeah, that would have been nice, but so, you know, there are some people, they do just see food as sustenance, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and that's fine. But I think that for other people, especially chefs, and, you know, like you, you love mm-hmm. food, and I think it can just bring so much joy. And the reason I love it is just the way it brings people together, and that's sort of why I do it, and that's why I eventually want my own restaurant. And again, with that, it's not just the food; it's the whole atmosphere. It's, you know, beautiful tablecloths and everything like that, and good service is incredibly important.
Actually, two things. You've been talking so much about the catering. I'm just going to eat now.
I haven't had any breakfast.
And so you knew from a very young age that you wanted to go into food. Is that right?
Yeah. My parents, like I said, we grew up in this wonderful place, it's good, right?
It is good.
that's also made with chocolate that's made in Suffolk as well, from Pump Street chocolate. But yeah, my father, he's lived a lot abroad, and he is a real sort of gastronaut. Yes. Yes.
Gourmand.
Or gourmand, yeah. He loves food and he's a great cook. I'm sure my mother could relate a few mishaps in the kitchen. Too much salt or trying to salt beef or something, things like that. But they inspired me a lot. And he is a bit of a Francophile. He speaks fluent French and has lived in France as well. And we'd always go on holiday. Kimberly is eating other cake.
Yes. I was trying to do it quietly.
No,
it's so not. Carry on with your story.
We, often holidays would be in France, whether it was the Dordogne or other regions, or Paris maybe, and food would be such a important part of it, you know, going to the bakery in the morning, getting lovely fresh baguettes and croissants. And so I was definitely, just seeing them cook from scratch every day, and we'd, you know, eat together as well, which I think is so important, and happening probably a lot less these days. So I knew I wanted to do something to do with food, but I never really knew. I was also very studious. Major geek. So I did languages for my A-level. I did German, French and English, art up to AS levels, because I love art as well, and I think that's another side of my patisserie, but I think that's really important. And then I think I'm quite a sort of gentle I'm a lot less shy than I used to be, but I certainly didn't think I would definitely want to stay on at school to do my A-levels. I certainly didn't think after them I could go move to London and go work in kitchens. So especially, you know, after television programmes like MasterChef or whatever, when you see, I suppose in a lot of kitchens the stereotype is unfortunately real. There are these long hours and things, but I think a lot more and more so, you know, they're treating their staff a lot better and having proper rotas and not just working until everything's done until about 2 a.m. or things. So I think kitchen environments are improving a lot, but I wanted to go to university first, and I did French and Italian, and that involved a year abroad. So I spent 5 months in Bologna and 5 months in Avignon. And, you know, France and Italy, especially France, you know, it's known for its patisserie. So I think that was sort of the clincher to make me realise. I think I wanted to do pastry rather than just go into the normal side of the kitchen. I'm not really sure, but
the hot side of the kitchen.
I think because again, this sort of artistic side, which I think I've got a lot from my mother, she's an artist and a ceramicist. She has an exceptionally good eye. She loves colour, and so I think I got a lot that side from her. And I think with desserts and patisserie and you know, you see your afternoon tears with the tears of afternoon tea with the tears of cakes and everything looking so beautiful. And I think because of my artistic side and because of wanting to make things look as beautiful as they are to look at, and as delicious as they are to eat, that made me want to go more to the side of patisserie. I think you can be a bit more elaborate with it as well. Although these days, chefs are doing all that foamy stuff, and
I think, and you know, they're
probably the savoury things are often in, you know, very high class restaurants are probably just as beautiful as the desserts nowadays. But I think that's what, yeah, a lot of factors.
And I think that is something that's very striking about your baking, though, is how beautiful it looks, and there are flowers everywhere, and everything's beautifully bright, and even your choice of plates when we were at the market, it seemed kind of very well kind of thought through to really elevate and show off what it was. And there was something quite, I think, as you said earlier on, absolutely, I think food is, well, anyone who listens to the podcast knows that I think food is important. but that it is something, it is something beautiful as well. And it is something, particularly with desserts, it's something to celebrate.
Exactly.
It really is.
It's the end of the meal and you want it to be, you know, the big finale and memorable. If you've finished a meal on a crap dessert, it's really,
really sad.
Yeah,
I still have.
I would go home stomping my feet.
I recently went to a new restaurant. I wouldn't say who it was, but it was delicious and it was exquisite and it was wonderful. But it had made up the same chef. I'd been to his restaurant a few years back, and I was really disappointed with the dessert, and I kind of hadn't forgiven him until about 2 weeks ago, where he kind of made up for it with this incredible, incredible dessert. And I was like, okay, that's okay now. Yeah. Because those things do last. There's a memory in those food moments. And you think, oh, that wasn't what you said it was going to be.
And I do think London's expensive to eat out, but I think that a factor of that and, I don't know, just being busy, I haven't eaten out in that, not for a while, but so often, you know, the starter's fine, the main course is fine, and then the dessert is, I think so many places they don't care enough about the pudding.
An afterthought. They just think, oh, well,
I mean, sometimes there
isn't ice cream.
Yeah, fruit bowl. I mean, sometimes there isn't even everyone could make a dessert, but they don't actually have a pastry chef, so it's just sort of, you know, some kitchens, they'll all get there in the morning and then say, oh, who's doing the dessert? Who's going to do something today? So, yeah, it is a bit of an afterthought sometimes, which I think is really sad. And I think, why I love this. It's part of sort of food bringing people happiness. And I think when it's the end of the meal, you just really want it to be delicious and beautiful and make people smile, which is... And also just... I think I've sort of realised with these more natural ingredient, or just more sort of whole grain flours, maybe a bit less sugar so you can really taste everything. It makes people happy because of all these wonderful flavours and because of all the good stuff in it, because I do think we are what we eat a bit. And if you are putting, you know, these lovely proper butter and instead of margarine, not saying that, you know,
it's fine.
If you have, you know, I think all... with a pinch of salt and all, you know, it's all about balance. And if you have a burger or whatever, you know, white bread or one day, but then there's something else another. And I do think that people actually sort of feel, I had people say to me, oh, I don't feel sort of sluggish or funny or like I've had a load of sugar when I eat your cake. So I feel like I've eaten something that's sort of had some good stuff in it. And that's what I really like about these ingredients. I can sort of apply my skills as a pastry chef, you know, the skill, the way I've learned how to layer flavours and how important really great flavours and texture and making things look beautiful is. So I can apply them to these less well-known ingredients that people, you know, hippies in the 60s and 70s and brown saucepans of lentils and everything, healthy, sort of wholesome, has got this slight stigma of being exactly that, sort of brown saucepans of lentils and not looking like something that can be that refined, or and maybe, you know, being a lot of vegetables or and not that tasty, perhaps. People have this idea of food that's good for you has to not be tasty, but I don't think that's true. And
no,
I,
and it absolutely shouldn't be true. No. That's worrying, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
The only way you can nourish yourself is to make it some sort of punishment.
Exactly.
Sort of labour.
Yeah. Oh, that's so indulgent. Ooh. But I think these recipes, they've got the whole grain flours, but it's also incredibly, you know, it's got about a centimetre of chocolate icing on top.
Delicious. appreciate that a lot.
So, yeah, I hope people do see my next book as sort of, you know, celebration. It really is. It's just a celebration of all the ingredients I've discovered since I started baking.
And it's a mixture of sweet and savoury in the second book.
Yes. So there's breakfasts, which is a mixture of both. The sort of banana bread, or there's also...
Was that the banana bread we had this morning?
Yes.
Oh my God, it's delicious. It's delicious. It was great.
Thank you. That's...
And also the date scone bread.
Oh yeah, the sort of soda-ish...
Soda bread. Thing.
Sweetie bread, yeah.
That was delicious.
That's in the
I'm definitely going to be making that.
Yeah, they're both too really simple as well, and just simple and quick and yummy and good stuff. And then there's also things like sort of a bit. I shouldn't say that. It's not strictly baking. It's sort of a. I think a lot of people are a bit scared by the word souffle. So I have a souffle that's just you can do it on the whole batch, and you just whip up your. Yeah, you separate your eggs and then whip mix in sort of chives and feta and things. It's chives. It's a lot of recipes. and then salt and pepper, and then fold in whipped egg whites and bake it as you would a sort of normal omelet. So it's, I call it a sort of souffle omelet. So it's sort of the methods of making a. Traditional souffle that would go into the oven, but you can do it nice and quickly in the morning. And then there's some caramelised red onion and parsley scones. And then there's what else? And there's lots of breads, a chapter on breads and crackers, so a lot of savoury there. And then cakes and biscuits, lunches and suppers, which is everything from walnut and whole grain pastry quiche with asparagus. And taleggio and prosciutto to sort of baked gnocchi. And that's another thing I really want people to do. And then the last chapter is desserts and puddings. I wanted it to be just puddings, but the book comes out in America and they have a pudding for them is sort of custardy
is a,
thing.
Yeah,
Yeah. So I had to... I also think, I don't know, sometimes I say dessert. I prefer the word pudding.
Something much more homely.
Yeah, exactly.
About the word pudding.
I'd use dessert for something, you know, in a sort of... Michelin-starred restaurant, you know, something with the chocolate spirals and things like that. There's not chocolate spirals in my book, don't worry. But so the last chapter is that, like this quiche has got taleggio and prosciutto in, but if you don't want cheese or if you don't want the meat, if you want to keep it vegetarian, you don't have to put it in, or if asparagus aren't in season, use other stuff. So I really want people to really use the recipes and see what's around them in terms of what's in season, also see what's in their cupboards if whole grain wheat, if they haven't got that, but they might have spelt, that's fine to use as well because they're both varieties of wheat. Or just play around a bit, maybe. You don't have, you're lacking 50 grams of flour, but you might have rye flour or something, try that. So I really want people to make the recipes their own and just enjoy them and enjoy eating what they make with them. And hopefully sort of see that baking with these ingredients is really, really delicious. And it can be just as delicious, if not more, I think, than sort of the classic stuff. But I'll always love Mary Berry and my granny's baking and my mother's baking.
And that's fine. I mean, there can be room for everyone. We
exactly.
We don't have to kind of sign up to one tribe and that's it.
Exactly.
The rest of us are at war with each
that's
other
what
about
I think. And
what
that's
we
what,
can eat.
Yeah. That's what I think. I you know, I love Pierre Kaufman and all the very classic chefs. Not saying that he does this, but, you know, and I think, you know, there's that wonderful French, a lot of butter, a lot of cream and everything like that. And then more South Italy with lots of olive oil and everything. And then we've been seeing people eating raw food and sort of dehydrated wakame crackers or stuff like that. I think there's space for all of it. And I think it's all really interesting. And the methods that raw chefs, you know, like this morning also, where you had the banana bread, I also bought a blueberry and lemon mousse cake. But you know, normally a mousse is whipped cream and eggs whipped up as well. But this was actually, it's not vegan because it has honey in it, because I think the honey with the lemon is lovely. But, you know, instead of cream, I soaked cashew nuts and then blended them because they make a really delicious cream. And then I whipped up coconut milk, the thick part of the tin, and folded that in. So it's so, you know, I love a traditional pata bomb when I heat up my sugar to 121 and pour it into my whipping egg yolks and then folding in the double cream and then my chocolate to make a very traditional mousse. But then I also have, it's also wonderful to see these different things. Mm. And I think there's space for it all and we should celebrate all of it.
Yeah, that's lovely. And well, the first thing is that we will have a copy of the book to give away to
signed copy.
But what's also really lovely to hear, and actually is probably playing out in your books, it'll be interesting to see where a third book might go, but that it seems to track part of your process, I suppose. So
yeah,
and that this one, as you have said, describes something more balanced, less exclusive, and kind of respect for the food as well. Like, actually, we're using butter because butter is probably the tastiest, best ingredient for this particular recipe.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas then you, in the next recipe, maybe a non-dairy alternative might be the best ingredient for that recipe. Yeah. That it's not about loading the ingredients with any kind of morality or particular special powers or anything that we're talking about. Flavour and deliciousness, as well as some kind of nutritional aspects to it as well.
Yeah.
And I'm really pleased for you. Like, it's really lovely. Like, recovery is really hard. And especially where perhaps other parts of your life have fed into it, or it's ended up having a justifying element to it, you know, that you could have gone all the way down and carried on being the clean chef and it would have just been you and your eating disorder kind of hand in hand.
I did think at one point when my first book came out, or when I was sort of finishing it, editing the last bit of editing, oh, I should have done it vegan. I should have been completely vegan.
Mm.
Again, affected a lot by a lot of people starting to eat vegan around me. But anyway.
Are you aware now of the kinds of messages that you take in from around you around food? Are you more careful about it, or is it just about knowing yourself much more? Like, do you restrict the people that you follow on Instagram, for example, or not?
I don't really look at them. Again, it might have also been, you know, moving back to Suffolk, I was completely sort of not cut off. I did, but, you know, I was there in the country. I could really control myself, you know. I was, I had friends around, but a lot of them worked in London. I didn't need to go out to a restaurant and eat that. I could stay at home and control what I was eating a lot. And I did, that was when, yeah, I was looking definitely a lot more at Instagram at these people. But now I don't, no, I think it's also with moving back to London and also really being proud of being a chef and being trained properly and being sort of a part of that world and with other chefs, and food is something. And again, you know, being able to go to restaurants more because I'm become a bit more relaxed about my eating, and also because I'm back in the city, and that's just sort of, you know, I can't be a complete hermit. But I think it's being, because London, the food community is incredibly, chefs are incredibly supportive of people and of each other. And I don't want to be a pastry chef who doesn't eat any of what I make, or who goes to a restaurant and doesn't enjoy a really delicious pudding. But I think that move back to London and meeting a lot more chefs, and that definitely led me to just enjoy food more and, you know, go out with all of them and really savour all the wonderful restaurants we have here. And again, you know, meeting up with friends or having friends over to my favourite things and cooking for them. And it's just, and maybe not being cut off in Suffolk, you know, being back in the city and surrounded by a lot more friends or meeting new people or meeting new chefs. Just realised, I definitely have realised that food is something to be enjoyed and it brings people together and it's an incredibly joyful thing, and I don't want to carry on depriving myself or allowing food to sort of dictate who I meet or whether I go out of an evening or whether I have fun or just dictate my life, really. I want to, you know, I think it's very important to have a delicious supper and delicious breakfast, delicious everything, and to enjoy, sit down and enjoy food, but also I can't think about food 24/7. I want to think about my friends and my family and, you know, I've got to run a business and everything like that. So I've just realised that, yeah, I'm trying to find a bit of a better balance, which I think a lot of us are. Yeah.
Thank you, Nan. That's really lovely. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
And that's it. Thank you once again to Henrietta for joining me and sharing her story. Stay tuned to my Instagram account, that's @foodandpsych, for the chance to win a signed copy of her new book, The Natural Baker. You can find Henrietta on her website, and that's Henrietta Inman, that's HenrietaInman.com, and she's @HenriettaInman on Instagram. Finally, if you are affected by any of the issues we've discussed in this episode, please know that you're not alone, and please, please do ask for help. That just leaves me to thank you very much for listening, and until next time, I wish you the very best of health.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.